Your health and well-being show here on Channel 8. This airs every Monday at noon on Channel 8.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Who Cares Wins, your health and wellbeing radio show on channelradio.co.uk. Yes, it's me, Jan Mulligan, back with you for 1 week and a special recorded interview with somebody I met at the Wellbeing Symposium 2015. Donna Francis, along with her colleague Hannah Tutt, work for an organisation called Silk. Last month, Angela and I popped off to meet with Hannah and Donna, and today we're going to share that interview with you. In this first segment, we'll find out about Donna and Hannah's backgrounds, how they became involved in Silk, but most importantly, we find out what is Silk.
Back in November, wasn't it? I went off to the Health and Wellbeing Symposium in Detling, Kent, and I bumped into Donna Francis from Silk. Hello, Donna, again.
Hello, nice to see you again.
And I'm with you today with your colleague, Hannah Tutt, also from Silk.
Hello. 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 Yeah.
And Donna, at the time, you were very keen to come on the radio show to explain to our listeners the work of Silk. Silk, in audio terms, people are thinking S-I-L-K. And it's a piece of thread.
And it's to do with clothing.
Oh, click. We do get click.
Yes. Oh, well, of course, transferring it.
That's the other one.
So probably the starting point then is, what does silk mean? How do we spell it? And what do you do?
Silk means Centre for Independent Living Kent. We support disabled people in the community around independent living issues and matters. We give information, advice and guidance in benefits, equipment and direct payments. I will come onto that a bit later.
Okay.
Employing a PA, which means personal assistant. Do you want to explain a bit more?
Yeah, we cover the whole of Kent and Medway.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a big area.
Mm-hmm.
And we deal mainly with adults, so 18 plus. However, we do support some people kind of in the transition phase, so kind of 16 to 18. And again, we wouldn't turn any families away, but we would signpost them to a more relevant organisation for them. We cover all impairments, all disabilities, so physical, mental health problems, learning difficulties, sensory, and also older people, because we've found that a lot of older people have similar difficulties to disabled people.
Yeah.
We are a disabled persons user-led organisation, so everybody that works within Silk is disabled themselves.
Right, and that's quite unique, I would imagine.
Yes.
It is, and that's one thing that I'm really proud of, you know, working for an organisation that are all disabled people, you know, the staff, the volunteers, you know, even our bookkeeper, you know, literally.
Yeah. Everybody, yes.
Silk is the Centre for Independent Living Kent, so it's a C at the front, not an S.
It is, C-I-L-K. And then we made the I little, so people wouldn't say click.
Right.
But it's silk.
And are you a company, a charity?
We are a charity. We have 9 directors and they are also our trustees, so we hold committee meetings every other month.
We were talking earlier, just before the interview started properly, that some people are volunteers, some people are employed, and the directors can't be employed because of the nature of being directors.
No.
You've got a complete mixture of people who are involved.
We have,
We've
got 2 paid members at the moment, but we're actually taking on 2 more members of staff next week.
So congratulations.
We are growing,
May I ask, how are you funded?
At the moment, we get our core funding from Kent County Council.
Right.
Although we are separate from them, you know, we do get funding funded by them. We also, in the past, we've had funding from the Office for Disability Issues.
Okay.
And then other smaller pots of money that, you know, we can find. And if we undertake any project, then we get paid, you know, with different organisations, then we get paid for that too.
Though, Hannah, you mentioned you're the chairperson.
I am.
Can you give us a little bit of background about yourself?
Yes. Well, I've been living independently for the last 14 years in a specially adapted purpose-built bungalow. And I've been doing mainly voluntary work, and I've been working with it for the last 2 years. And I'm also a patient representative with a East Kent Community Health Trust.
All right. Now, I came across the health magazine that
they
put out, and they asked for people to go on to that group. So how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing that for the last 2 and a bit years.
And anybody can volunteer to that, am I right?
And anyone, yes. Okay. And they're always looking for volunteers.
So that might be another topic for a show there.
I think so. Well, I think that's another theme.
And we have a contact we can give you after the show.
Okay. We love you all. Great. Well, these are great things. We need to shout about them.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And Hannah, do you mind me asking the nature of your disability?
Yes, I've got cerebral palsy, which affects all 4 of my limbs, but cognitively, I'm okay.
Right.
But it just affects me physically.
Sure. And I noticed from the notes that you gave us before we met is you have a GMPQ in health and social care.
I do. Yeah. That was many moons.
Many moons.
We won't test you on it
now.
No.
Okay. And you say, because you're a chairperson and director, you are a volunteer for SILP. Whereas, Donna, you are one of the 2 currently, soon to be 4, paid members of staff. Could you give us a little bit of background about yourself?
So, like Hannah, I live independently. I have been doing so for the last 8 years, so moved out of home 8 years ago. I'm a little person, so I have a condition. It's got a very long name.
I'll
test you later. It's called spondyloepiphyseal dysplasia congenita.
That's a lot to spring on a kid, isn't it?
Short, what does that mean for our listeners?
Okay, so we shorten it to SED.
Yes.
So spondylo is of the spine.
Mm-hmm.
Epiphyseal, you have a growth part in your bone called the epiphysis. I can never pronounce that right. And there's something wrong with mine, so it affects all of my bones. Dysplasia means condition of, so it's a condition of the spine and the bones. And congenita is from birth.
Right.
So I was born with it. It's a genetic condition.
Yep.
Neither of my parents have the condition. No one in my family have it. It's what they call a genetic mutation.
Wow.
So when I was conceived, there was a change in one of the genes, and so I have SED. I could pass it on. There's a 50-50 chance.
Right.
I don't have children, but if I decide to have children in the future, there's a 50-50 chance of passing it on. So the way that it affects me is none of my joints perform properly. And so, for example, my hips, they're not in the right place, basically.
Okay.
So they've gone halfway up my pelvis because the socket never fully formed.
Okay.
And so I get a lot of pain. I use a wheelchair. I can walk a little bit, but I use the wheelchair when I'm out and about.
Mm.
I've never let it stop me. I went to a mainstream primary and secondary school and had a bit of support. Went to university. I did health studies and social science. When I studied at Canterbury, or Christchurch, at university, and one of my achievements within that was when I did my dissertation, I looked at health promotion and whether disabled people are included in health promotion, and no, basically.
No.
When I did my presentation for that, one of the lecturers said, this is really good. And I reckon that we could make a paper out of this. So I collaborated with one of the lecturers at Christchurch, and in February 2010, we had a paper published in the Health Education Journal.
We're sitting around with this famous person here.
I
can sell it on eBay. Well done.
Thank you. And, you know, I drive, I've got a highly adapted car, And, I've lived like anybody else, really.
Brilliant.
And, I've been working for Silk for 9 years. It was my first job I got out of university. Mm-hmm. Before that, I was working in Sainsbury's on the checkout girl.
Yay.
And they were brilliant there. They adapted the till for me and everything. I was on till number 11.
Well done, Sainsbury's,
yeah? Yeah. Really, really good. So I love working for Silk, as you can tell. It'll be my 10th anniversary in October.
Yes, to say that in front of the
I'll say your chairperson sitting next to you.
My boss is sitting next to me. But no, I really do. I've always found them to be a really good employer. And I think because my bosses have always been disabled people themselves, they know what it's like, you know, when I've needed to have time off for hospital appointments or something's flared up or had an operation, you know, so really understanding.
We've touched on what Centre for Independent Living does. You listed some of the services at the beginning. But maybe you could take us through now from the point of view of a listener who may not have heard of you before, who may or may not be having difficulties at the moment. But why might they come to you? Can you cherry pick a few things?
I expect you have heard with all the cuts out there, people cutting them, care packages, the local body has less money to spend, and benefits changing to the personal independent payment.
Mm-hmm. PIP.
PIP.
Sounds nice, but it's...
No, it's not nice.
No.
It's a very, very worrying time for people.
Certainly. And so you can provide them with advice and guidance through the quagmire of that?
We can.
We do peer support. We are able to write letters with them. And
so if somebody's listening and thinking, yes, I could do with the help of that, but actually I can't afford, do they need to pay you? Does it come out of their allowance?
No, we don't charge.
So free to clients?
It's free and confidential.
Excellent.
Yeah. So someone may have had their care package cut, so they can contact us and that Hannah said we can help them write a letter of complaint. Mm-hmm. We know all the right people to contact, the right people to send that letter to, and we can also attend assessments with people. So if they've got an assessment with social services or a benefit assessment, then we can attend those with people. If we can. A lot of the time, they're not given much notice.
No.
We're not given much notice. So, you know, we try as much as we can.
Yes, and if we can't help, we can signpost people to the right organisation.
Right.
And sometimes people ring us and say, I'm a disabled person, maybe they've just been diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, or maybe they've had a stroke, and they'll ring us and say, what's out there?
Yeah.
So basically, we can literally give them all the information, you know, of what's out there. And it's amazing what people don't know. So sometimes they say, have you got a blue badge? Oh, what's that?
Yes.
And you think, you assume that everybody knows what a blue badge is, but not everyone does.
No.
So we can signpost people.
Yeah. And also that key from my personal experience, and although it's that you don't know these things, but also we wouldn't have probably, from my husband as it was, I probably wouldn't have assumed that we would get a blue badge, so I wouldn't have even asked.
Mm. By
You know, but your that almost advice of actually taking away that stress for people to actually give them that, well, actually, you might... Do you where you're going to get this and you're going to get that, which possibly takes that stress out of that situation of the diagnosis is stress alone for them.
Definitely.
But then how they live with that and how they do their daily life may be changing is wonderful to be able to just go to somebody who will be able to empathise. You've been there, seen it, done it, got the T-shirt.
Yeah.
And know all, as you say, even if it's not, you can physically can't get there to help them just because you're so busy.
Yeah.
But actually you can signpost and they start to have that control, this element of I am still independent, which is very key.
And some people, you know, they need to offload. So, you know, that first initial phone call can often be quite a long one because they need to talk. They might not have been able to talk to anyone else about that.
No.
And I think it's also about asking the right questions as well.
Yeah.
And it's because we're independent, people might like to speak to someone that's independent, not a family member, not local authority.
Yeah, definitely. And that they aren't, they're fearful that, oh, they're going to sell me something, they're going to make me have this product or this service.
Not at all.
Brilliant.
No, or, conversely, by asking the question might mean that they lose something that they've got now. It's quite often you have that thing of, I can't talk to my GP because he or she will, and I can't talk to social services because there's knock-on effect. So you being that independent, so you're independent for them, but you're also independent of other services.
Definitely. And I think people really appreciate that, that, you know, they often say, oh, you know, you're not with the local authority, are you? Like, no, no, you know, we're totally independent. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think people appreciate that.
So, as an individual, it's free of charge.
It is.
If somebody's phoning up on behalf of an individual, that also free of charge?
It is,
So, begin to think, it's all free of charge. How do you get your funding? How do you keep going?
Yeah, well,
that's a whole good point.
Is it a can of worms?
Yes, it is a can of worms. I would like to say we were self-sufficient in our own right, but unfortunately, at the moment, we haven't got the structure to enable us to do that. So we are lucky enough at the moment to get our core funding from KCC, Kent County Council.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's really good that they fund you, but you say you are actually separate from them.
No strings attached.
And they know the work that we do, so they know that we could be supporting people to fight the decision that Kent County Council made. So they know that. And I think they appreciate that, you know, that we are independent and that people need someone to kind of advocate for them and be alongside them. And we also get funding from other smaller pots of money, you know, anywhere we can, really.
And we also do a lot of fundraising.
I was going to ask whether people do runs for you or events or charity open days or something, do they?
We are getting that way, but it's a struggle at the moment with the limited manpower.
Or woman power.
People power. And although, like you say, we're free to individuals, we do have organisations come to us, and we're actually working with one at the moment, and so we would charge them.
Right.
And we charge £50 an hour plus travel expenses.
Good.
But one of my roles as information officer is that I go around and give talks to organisations and support groups that support disabled people directly. So we don't charge for that, but they can give donations, which they quite often do. Any donations, basically.
Yes.
So the organisations that might want us to do a bit of work with them or advise on something, then we would charge them.
Okay. And in that funding that you get from Kent County Council, is it a 3-year period, a 5-year period renewable? Or
it's on a yearly basis. That's what's worrying. Because we could have our funding cut at any time.
We have to reapply every year.
Right.
Wow. We haven't always been funded by Kent County Council. That's only been over the last few years, isn't it? We, back in 2005 or 2006, we got a 3-year grant from the Big Lottery Fund.
Ah.
So that obviously kept us going for quite a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, the last few years it's been Kent County Council.
Right.
Yes, we have to reapply every year.
So, conversely, if we've got obviously listeners who might be able to take advantage of your services, if we've got listeners who are looking to sponsor, support, to make a donation, you'd be very happy to hear.
Oh, definitely. We won't. All donations
welcome.
Excellent. Well, we are worldwide domination, so hopefully if they're listening in America, then we can get them to contact you.
Please do.
And so you're, as you said, Kent, Medway, do you have an office? Do you work from home?
We do. Our office is based in Ashford at the County Square Shopping Centre.
And is that a sort of a, like a drop-in centre office that people can visit?
We have a drop-in service on a Tuesday.
Right.
10 to 3.
Yeah.
And literally just drop in, or should people phone ahead and...
No, you can literally drop in, and then there's normally someone in the office on a Wednesday and Friday as well.
Right.
So if you want to come in on those days, you can always give us a call, and we can book an appointment. So we're very pleased with our office, aren't we?
Yes.
And it's lovely.
And it's at a primary, an accessible location.
Excellent. But if somebody can't get to you, then you are ready, willing and able to travel to visit them?
Yes, we are. Yeah, we do home visits when appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
We try and give most of the information over the phone or email or text, but we know for some people if it's a bit more complex or they need actual help to write a letter or something, then we can do home visits.
Your health and well-being show here on Channel Radio. Every Monday at noon on Channel Radio.
As with all of our shows, we'll be playing music as we go along today, and all of the music tracks have been selected by Hannah, Donna and their colleagues at Silk, and this first track is aptly called Things Can Only Get Better.
You can walk my path, you can wear my shoes, lend a tug like me, and be an angel too. But maybe you ain't never gonna feel this way. You ain't never gonna know me. But I know you. Singing in our thing can only get better. It can only get take it off from me, you know. I know that things can only get better.
And And welcome back to Who Cares Wins on Channel Radio, with me, Jan Mulligan, and the recorded interview that Angela and I did with Hannah and Donna of Silk, and in this next section we'll be focusing on the financial side of life.
We were talking earlier about the range of services that you provide, and in amongst that there was the phrase that you use, direct payments.
Ooh.
Now, can you enlighten, yes, for those of us who've not heard that term before?
Everyone who's assessed or needing a social care package is given a personal budget, and some people may decide at that point to drain their bank account, mm-hmm, or there is another system called the CAC card. You can pay for your care that way. It's all about paying for your care yourself, but and organising your care yourself.
Right, so the flip side of that would be that somebody else manages the money.
Yeah, if you decide not to have a direct payment, like Hannah said, you would have a personal budget, so you would still have an allocated sum of money. But if you felt that you couldn't do that yourself, you could either have social services arranged for support for you, or you can nominate a person or an organisation to arrange the support with you, and yes, but you can still be in control.
Right.
So you can still decide, you know, who you want to support you. Because that's what direct payments is about. It's about having choice and control over your own, yeah, support, deciding who gives you that support, when, how.
Because I'm right, yeah, saying historically, one didn't get that choice.
No.
You were,
no,
handed the services and told,
yeah,
what you were going,
everyone,
to get.
Everyone was provided care by the local authorities,
mm,
and you didn't have any choice. Who came to your door, when and where.
Yeah. So this is a very important move, yeah, then, isn't it?
It is. It's all about choice and freedom and control.
Mm. And direct payments actually came out of disabled people themselves.
Right.
Yes.
I can't remember the whole story, but I think there were some disabled people in a care home or something, weren't there?
Yes.
And they wanted to be able to move out into the community. And said, well, you know, the money you're spending on us, can't we have that, mm, to, you know, to choose how we have that support? Very loosely explained, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it was that kind of mentality that we want to live in the community like, mm, everybody else.
Yeah.
Mm.
And also, more importantly, choose who comes into your, mm, home. And whatever,
yeah,
you, whoever,
exactly,
you work with, it's very people orientated. Mm. So
very personal as well.
Absolutely. So do I want this person? Do I connect with them? Or, exactly, can I choose someone else? Can I not have the person who I know down the road, who,
yeah,
I've met and formed a relationship with over X amount of,
yeah,
years,
mm,
rather than some stranger,
mm,
who's from a general service,
yeah,
who,
exactly,
may not know as much as that other person.
And how recent are direct payments?
No, but I thought you might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say 2001, but I think it was before then, wasn't it?
Well, I was one of the very first people to go.
Were you?
And that was about 2001.
Okay. Right. Around then.
Right. So it's, yeah, she's going long enough that most people, if not all people, should,
yeah,
know,
yes,
that it's possible.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't,
we
know.
Still don't know.
No.
No.
It's not very well promoted.
Right.
And a lot of people are scared about it, because,
mm,
to have that some money in your bank account.
Mm.
And it is a separate bank account.
Yes,
you have to have a separate bank account for your direct, just for your direct payment money,
okay,
so it's not mixed in,
yeah,
with your own personal money.
Right.
And you have to prove how you're spending your direct payment,
yeah,
so invoices and bank
accounts. Yeah, there's a lot of responsibilities.
Mm. And for some people that's really daunting, because,
mm,
with direct payments you can employ your own staff, so you do become that employer.
Yeah.
But there are payroll companies out there that,
yeah,
can do the payroll side for you, so it's not as daunting as it may first sound.
And when it works. I've been employing my own PAs, my personal assistant, since 2010. And I wouldn't say it's all red roses.
No.
And there is some pitfalls and troubles along the way, and to me, I wouldn't be without employing my own staff. It's given me a lot more freedom and choice, and I decide who works for me.
Okay. So that brings us actually neatly on to what a personal assistant can do, and how you go about finding them. In the old-fashioned world, would a personal assistant have been referred to as a carer, or is that a different role?
Yeah, well, both roles are still out there.
Right.
But I think before direct payments, it would be, probably have been an agency.
Right.
So you'd have a carer, home worker, you know, whatever you want to call it, from an agency. Whereas now, you know, like Hannah said, you can employ your own staff. There are still carers, because a lot of family members who care for their loved ones are classed as a carer.
Okay.
So that role is still out there, and you've still got the agencies that have care workers, you know, that go out into the community. So both roles are still there, but personal assistance is much more in the control of the person who's employing them.
Yeah.
So am I right in thinking it can, you can choose anybody then?
Yeah.
You can, within reason, as long as they don't live with you. So you couldn't employ a family member who lives with you.
No.
But you can employ a family member if they don't live with you.
Right.
Which a lot of people, you know, may not realise. You can employ family or friends, like I say, as long as they don't live with you. Or you can decide to advertise, and Hannah can tell you about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I have advertised on them. There's a website called PA Pool.
PA Pool, as in P-O-O-L?
Yes, as in swimming pool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you put up your profile, and the PAs put up their profile, and you go through a catalogue of profiles. And if you like the look of somebody, you start
matchmaking for personal assistants.
Yeah,
<isn't it?
laughs> Although you will tell us, Hannah, the security element, surely. So that must be a worry, actually, all joking aside, if you are going onto a website and looking at profiles of people. There must, I'm assuming, be a process of security checks.
The website always verifies PAs.
Right.
And they had to themselves go through checks before they submit their profile. I couldn't just go on, could I, and make my profile up?
No.
Not advisable. But yes.
And then as a PA employer, you would do your own checks as well.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You know, DBS
check. You would always do your own check and take up any references.
Yeah. So it is, as people may be listening, it is the replication of running a business.
Yes, it is.
Mrs. Entrepreneur over there.
Yeah, it is. Exactly like that. So you have a lot of responsibility, not paperwork.
If you want it, which is the benefit of the beauty.
But another way of doing it and still being in control, which is how I do it, I actually have a self-employed PA. But with that, you have to make sure that they really are self-employed.
Right.
So get written evidence that they are self-employed. Get them to sign something they are. Because you don't want them coming back in a year's time saying, you haven't paid my tax, you haven't paid my national insurance. So for me personally, I only get a few hours a week. That really works well for me. So I don't have to worry about the tax, national insurance, but it works really well.
In terms of the funding that you're provided with, is there an element that says this is for personal assistance, this is for transport, or is it because it's a direct payment, it's a lump sum, and then you choose how you spend it?
You have to have it allocated in your support plan.
Right.
The support plan itemises all your daily needs, all your daily routines, and then the costings and what you can pay for and what you can't pay for.
And when you first get your direct payment, that you contact social services, they come out and do an assessment and talk with you about the things you're struggling with,
right,
the things that you can't do but maybe would like to do if you have the right support.
Mm.
And then they will decide, we can give you support for X, Y and Z, but actually for A, we can't, and so you need to pay for that yourself. if you decide to employ your own staff, within the direct payments you'll have enough for the PA's wages, their holiday pay, sick pay, all the insurances, the payroll if you decide to use a payroll company.
Wow. And coming back to the Kent card, is that sort of a halfway house that somebody else can help manage it for you rather than it being all on your shoulders?
Well, I use the Kent card.
Right.
And the reason I do is because I only have 5 hours of support a week, so for me it was easier. So basically what it is, it's like a credit debit card, and KCC loads the money on there, and then my PA invoices me, and then there's an online banking system, and I transfer the payment over. Right. I believe you can use it as a credit debit card, and you have a PIN number, but I've never used it that way myself.
So again, it's
I just do it online. So it means that, because what they have to do, if you have direct payments, you have to have an annual check to look at, make sure you're spending it, you know, how you should be. So with the Kent card, my name's on it and Kent County Council's name's on it. So they can access the Kent card account and they can check, you know, that you're spending it correctly.
Right. And so from the point of view of your clients, you can give them the pros and cons of different systems, not only from knowing sort of the legal and the historical side, but also from the personal experience side.
Yes.
Which I think is just a great holistic approach to things, isn't it?
It is, and I would say most of our trustees employ their own staff or have direct payments in some form or another, don't they?
Yes.
The majority. Not all, but the majority.
Your health and wellbeing show here on Channel 8, Every Monday at noon on Channel 8.
Time for another piece of music now, and this next track is Whatever You Want by Status Quo.
Thank you.
Your health and well-being show here on Channel Radio. Channel Radio. Please get in every Monday at noon on Channel Radio.
And welcome back to Who Cares Wins with me, Jan Mulligan, and the recorded interview that Angela and I conducted with Hannah Tutt and Donna Francis of Silk. In this next section, Hannah and Donna will explain some of the realities that exist for disabled people today.
We've talked quite a lot about the funding side of things, but obviously we've got the getting out there and doing, once you've got the money in your pocket, how are you going to get around?
Yeah, I think in some places access has become easier. Then in other places, you know, it's still a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of shops still have quite narrow aisles. And if you go to, a smaller town, then a lot of shops may not be accessible. But, you know, we can, if people are coming across that, then we can, they can contact us and we can point them in the right direction of, you know, where they need to go. There's the Equality and Human Rights Commission, and they can take on cases where, you know, you're having problems with accessing the service, mm-hmm. and they can advise you on, you know, on what you can do.
I'm right in saying that's taken on board the Disability Discrimination Act as was.
Yes, that's
which
right.
Which is still a word that people are aware of these days.
Yeah, the DBA. Even though it's now been included in the Equality Act, hasn't it? But I think I'm right in thinking parts of the DBA are still legal, you know, they're still challengeable. And it goes back to the social model of disability, you know, which the society calls disability, and it does, you know, if you can't get into a building.
Yeah.
And there's been, you know, many cases over the years that people have taken to court, you know, and won. You know, I remember one where he couldn't get into his own bank, and they wanted to do the banking outside. You know, that's personal information, you know.
Let alone what the weather's doing to you.
That happened to me once.
Did it?
There was 3 steps up to the bank.
Because I'm aware that within planning and building regulations that buildings that were built before a certain date are not obliged to be adapted.
Yes. They have a ramp.
They're encouraged to do things like that.
A mobile, I know we visited, and it was, they would come out with a ramp and put it over the steps so you can get in.
They can't have a fixed adaption, but they can have a mobile portable.
And that, again, that can be that information dip, can't it? That the powers that be of the organisation and the building think we're exempt.
But it's all about making reasonable adjustments.
Absolutely.
And that's what it says in the DDA, reasonable adjustments. Yeah. Going back to people that might be having problems with accessing venues and towns and things, if they really, really want to complain, there's an organisation called the Disability Law Service, and they are volunteer solicitors and lawyers that you can talk to over the phone, and they can give you advice.
Right.
They can't kind of, what's the word? They can't represent you.
No, but they can signpost or suggest, advise.
But going to representation, in Canterbury, you've got the Kent Law Clinic.
You have.
Which is linked to Kent University.
They're very good.
Yeah, and they can actually represent you. They use their students, law students.
They represented my husband.
I'll just say.
And we won.
Yay.
Under the DDA we got them. So,
fantastic.
They were brilliant, actually. Brilliant. Yeah. And again, it gives it such great exposure for the students. So, it's a win-win. Yeah. So, brilliant.
That's
because they're supported by their academics, we should say. It's not just students.
No. We had a proper barrister when we were in court,
And how about just mobility in general? Access to trains, buses, taxis?
Yeah, transport is quite an off, a popular inquiry, that we get. So with trains, a lot of trains now, they have removable ramps. I'm not talking about the underground, but overground. Although the underground, not if I've tried it myself, a little bit scared, but apparently some of the underground stations are now accessible and you can get on and off the train. Never tried it myself.
Yeah.
I haven't got the gut.
They have two different symbols now, and I may get this around the wrong way, but it's the wheelchair within a circle and it's colour coded, and one colour means that the it's step-free access from train to street level.
Yeah.
And another one is it's step-free access for part of that. So it might be that you can get on and off the train, but there might be a couple of steps. Or you can get from street level down to the platform, but you can't necessarily get onto the train without assistance.
Okay.
But they explain all that. But there are more and more of the completely separate access symbols coming online. In.
Maybe I should just go for it.
We'll go on a trip. Yeah?
By the bullet.
Yes. Definitely. But with trains, there, if you're a frequent user, there is a National Rail card specifically for disabled people.
Yes.
Disabled Person Rail card, I think it's called. Mm. I think it costs a certain amount for a year, or you can get it for 3 years. So that's really good. With the buses, again, more buses are becoming accessible. Slowly but surely.
Yeah, yeah.
But not everywhere.
No.
And again, in Kent, you can get a card exemption. You don't have to pay for the buses at all.
No,
and I'm sure it might be like that in other places.
And if you need a PA all the time, you can get an exemption for a PA as well.
That's good. It's interesting. It's something you would expect to happen.
Yes.
But doesn't always.
No.
It could fall through that. So that's interesting to know.
Yeah.
And is that just Kent, or should that be a national thing?
I'm not sure.
Right. Because we should just stress, obviously, you are a Kent-based organisation.
We are, yeah.
And what we're hoping to do here is obviously let listeners know what's available that you're aware of for them if they're not living in Kent, whether they're elsewhere in the UK or internationally, to just pop that thought into their heads of saying, I wonder if I can get that, to then go on off and ask somebody.
And there should be similar organisations to us throughout the country, throughout the UK.
Great.
You can contact us and we can have a look for you. Or if you just Google something like disabled, independent living, and then your county or your town, it may come up.
Yes.
And we should say other reputable search engines are available.
Okay.
We don't want to be assuming that we're recommending Google.
No,
it's just one way.
Because we do belong to a network for disabled people, use a led organisation called SEMPO.
How are we spelling that?
S-E-M-D-P-O.
Stands for Southeast Network of Disabled People's Organisations. So, Another acronym.
We might have another quiz going on. Although I must admit, with transport, it's also interesting with my experience of a particular train company, who will remain nameless, but you could probably guess, they're in the press at the moment, that you can do all of the wonderful facilities and organised assistance, and then you can end up getting to your destination and being left on the train.
Yeah,
no one comes.
Should I tell you what I do?
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you're meant to give them 24 hours notice. But I think, where's the spontaneity in that? It's a fancy trip to London. So I don't book the assistance anymore, and I just turn up. I say, I'm here. Yeah, we'll get you the ramp. Can you run through to the station that I'm going to? Yeah, we can do that. And they have actually said to me, booking the assistance doesn't always work, obviously.
No.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. I set myself a little challenge. I was like, I'm not going to book the assistance. And it was fine, so I don't bother booking it now.
Yeah.
But you'll be on the phone for like 20 minutes sometimes booking the assistance.
But I do think, from even the assistance point of view, it didn't get through to the train operator driver at the train we were getting. But he then assured us he had run through to the destination service, which was a major London destination. Yeah. It wasn't a little small train station. No one came to get him.
Right.
And so what I would perhaps suggest is that if you are, is to always make sure you are near the conductor that you are still in their face.
Yeah.
And that they can't forget you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just keep pressing that button that opens the door.
Yeah.
I've had to do that.
Well, my husband just put his wheelchair in so the doors can shut.
Yeah, that's another option.
I can remember a time where you used to only be able to travel in the guards then.
Yes. Yeah, you were playing with all the bicycles.
Chickens in the olden days.
Don't call me a chicken, Jan.
So we have moved on a little bit.
We have.
Yeah.
And with the transport side of things, a lot, we have inquiries where people might have hospital appointments, but they haven't got transport. So there are voluntary organisations out there that can provide volunteer drivers. So in Kent, you've got the British Red Cross, and I imagine that's probably a national thing. The volunteer bureaus, they can provide volunteer drivers. And also, there is hospital transport, but you do have to meet the criteria, quite a strict criteria, but that is another option for some people.
Okay. Okay.
And in our final piece of music, chosen by Donna, Hannah and their colleagues at Silk today, we have Take That and Rule the World.
You light the skies up above me. A star so bright, you blind me. Don't close your eyes, don't fade away, don't fade away. Oh, yeah, you and me, we can ride on a star. If you stay with me, girl, we can rule the world. Yeah, you and me, we can light up the sky. If you stay
Your health and well-being show here on Channel Radio. Every Monday at noon on Channel Radio.
Welcome back to Who Cares Wins. Angela and I had a fascinating afternoon with Hannah and Donna of Silk, and we hope that you've enjoyed listening to them today. This last section provides all of their contact details, but don't worry if you miss anything, because as always, we'll be posting contact details to both Silk and the various organisations that Hannah and Donna have referred to today on our Facebook page, LinkedIn and Twitter, so it'll all be there for you to find at your leisure. Just leaves me to say thank you all for listening today. Playing us out are Hannah and Donna, followed by Brightside. Bye for now.
Now, in the break, you mentioned membership.
Yes, so people become members of Silk.
Okay.
We have two types of membership. Full members, so they are people aged 18 or over, living and or working in Kent or Medway, and who are disabled people themselves. So you can become full members, have full voting rights in our AGM, get the invite to our different meetings, events, get a bi-monthly bulletin put together by yours truly, with lots of really helpful information in there. Alternatively, there is the other type of membership called associate membership, and that's for people who aren't disabled people, but they still want to support Silk and live or work in Medway and Kent. So, and you don't have voting rights, but you can have access to our events and our bi-monthly bulletin. And the reason that we've done that is that we want control to be totally with disabled people. So any decision that's made about the charity and that we take to our members, we want them to be disabled people only that are voting. But we don't want to exclude other people that want to support us. And it's free. Membership is free.
My next question.
That's a way of gaining funds.
We have done that in the past, but then we found that our membership was dwindling. And for some, not all, but some disabled people, finances are difficult anyway. So that's why we decided to bring it back to free.
But presumably from the associate side, a donation would always be welcome.
I think that is on the form about a donation. If you want to make a donation.
It is, definitely.
So we have probably bombarded our listeners' ears with lots and lots of information to think about. How can people get hold of you? Do you have a central phone number that people can call?
We do. We have a central phone, It's 01233 633 187.
Okay, so just to repeat, that's 01233 633 187. So that's your office number.
Yes.
And if they want to get in touch through print in some shape or form, so either an email.
We have an email address, and that's enquiries@silk.org.uk. Or you can also access through our website. So we've got a form on there that you can fill in. And our website is www.silk.org.uk.
Excellent. So lots of ways they can grab hold of you.
And I see social media is on your little pamphlet there. So Twitter and Facebook as well.
We're on Twitter and Facebook. And I just forgot to mention, we also have a PA vacancy page on our website. So if people are looking for a PA, they can advertise on our website.
Well, thank you both so very much for your time this afternoon. It's been fascinating to talk to you, hear about everything.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Really good.
Time slipping by so fast. In the side of the road.